Hello and welcome to the Poetry Exchange. I'm Michael Schaefer.
And I'm Fiona Bennett. Lovely to see you, Michael.
Lovely to see you too, Fee. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, I think. Well, actually, I'm a bit discombobulated, to be honest.
Yeah. We're at the beginning of lockdown 2.0. It's a funny one, isn't it? We haven't got any of the novelty of the first lockdown. Clapping the NHS. All of that. It's different.
It is. And shorter days and the light and...
Shorter days, yeah, yeah. Do you know what we have got, though, Fee?
What have we got, Michael?
We've got a really lovely conversation for our listeners. It's just, I don't know, I think it's a little bit life-affirming, actually, if I may say so. I was listening to it just before coming to speak to you, and I wasn't involved in this conversation. I couldn't be there. So it's Al and yourself. And our guest was just such a lovely man, and with this fantastic love of poetry. So yeah, so there's a bit of light amidst these tricky times.
That's wonderful to hear. Yeah, it was definitely a very affirming experience to meet our guest and to be in this conversation. So I'm glad that's travelled for you, and hopefully it will for everybody listening too. Yeah, I think we did this conversation as part of our open call on National Poetry Day. And great. That was a great thing to do, because it was our first experiment with doing it without a kind of host or a partner, and just sort of hosting them ourselves, as we've discovered that we can now. And we did have a terrific couple of days meeting all sorts of people in all sorts of places.
Yeah, that was terrific, wasn't it? And I'm sure it's something that we'll be doing more of. So thank you to everyone that showed up and spoke to us and shared a poem with us. We're really grateful.
Now, earlier today, Michael, I was out on a walk taking my daily exercise, and I was speaking to a friend at the same time. Actually, I was on my phone speaking to them, and they were discussing how much they enjoy listening to podcasts whilst out on a walk. And were recommending a listen for me, of saying, oh, you should have a listen to it, take it for a walk sometime. And I'm mentioning this because I think it relates to what people are about to listen to in a kind of different way. I guess in a way, this idea of walking and having language and words kind of alongside us and with us. So I just wondered, it'd just be interesting to hear from people about that. You know, whether anybody else is of a mind to take a listening experience with them, be it a podcast or whatever else, on their daily exercise as we walk our way through wind and rain and lockdown. Anyway, that's maybe something we'll come back to.
So you're going to be listening to Fiona and Al talking about A Short Story of Falling by Alice Oswald, the poem that's been a friend to Charlie.
Could you just give it a read for us, Charlie?
Yeah, sure. It is the story of the falling rain to turn into a leaf and fall again. It is the secret of a summer shower to steal the light and hide it in a flower. And every flower a tiny tributary that from the ground flows green and momentary is one of water's wishes. And this tale hangs in a seed head smaller than my thumbnail. If only I, a passerby, could pass as clear as water through a plume of grass, to find the sunlight hidden at the tip, turning to seed a kind of lifting raindrip, then I might know, like water, how to balance the weight of hope against the light of patience. Water, which is so raw, so earthy strong, and lurks in cast iron tanks and leaks along, drawn under gravity towards my tongue, to cool and fill the pipe of this song, which is the story of the falling rain that rises to the light and falls again.
Beautiful.
Lovely. Thank you, Charlie. Have you read that before?
Only to myself.
Oh, well, that was a lovely reading. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Before we talk about the actual poem, Charlie, we'd love to know when you two first met.
I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was as soon as it was published, because I'm a bit of a fan of Alice Oswald, to say the least. So I can't remember when it was, but certainly 3 or 4 years, I think, maybe slightly longer. But I've been buying all her sort of collections as she's gone along.
And what was it about this one that stuck out for you?
I think it's just that it takes you to the, I suppose, the very essence of nature. And it's got that, you know, the life-giving forces of water. And also, I suppose it's got physicality and spirituality, I think. And I just love that one couplet. Then I might know, like water, how to balance the weight of hope against the light of patience. Mm. So it really was a love generally of her nature poetry. I love nature poetry, and then this, which it feels very accessible. You actually understand what she's getting at almost on the first read, and then you learn more, as I've discovered even, you know, latterly reading for today, that there is so much in it. And interesting, you know, the rhyming couplets, I think, give it a wonderful rhythm, which is unusual for her, because she doesn't do very much many rhyming couplets.
Mm. It's astonishing how even with that, and I really noticed it as you were reading it, that it's got this lovely kind of bouncing rhythm, and the rhymes just keep propelling us. But what's amazing is that even with all that structure there, as you say, it feels like it could just be somebody talking. It's very accessible. It somehow feels so natural.
It does feel like the water obviously flows and the poem flows. And it has that, also has a circular element to it. You know, the first rhyming couplet is a story of the falling rain to turn into a leaf and fall again. And then the end, which is a story of the falling rain that rises to the light and falls again. So that sort of never-ending circle of falling rain, evaporation, falling rain sort of thing, giving life.
So, Charlie, you said that when Al said, have you read it before, you said only to myself. Do you read it aloud to yourself?
I do, when people aren't going to think I'm mad. I've loved walking through, you know, the woods and things like that, reading poetry aloud. But I have been heard once or twice, but I do like that, and I like doing it very loudly.
Great.
So, because I think some poems I feel quite stuck with, but suddenly then you read it aloud and it sort of suddenly unfolds a bit, and you realise where sort of the breathing elements of the poem, you know, are and where, you know, where lines break up, really, even though they're not naturally set out as breaks. Mm. In the print. So yeah, I do. I think I've heard people say poetry is written to be read out aloud, and I certainly agree with that.
That's amazing, though, that you do actually do it. Did you? I mean, that's just an impulsive thing, the thing of walking and incantating into the woods.
I remember reading something by Jeanette Winterson where she said, "Well, go out and read this collection aloud." I can't remember whose collection it was, and that's what I did.
And are these just nature poems that you read in the woods, Charlie, or any poetry?
Any poetry.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Yeah. And I try and get stuck into poetry every day. So and of course, when you're walking the dog and you're on your own, then you know, you've got license to do all sorts of things, really. Well, you know what I mean.
So when you're going in the wood, do you take the copy with you, or do you have
yes.
it in your... Okay, so you're reading from the book in the woods.
Yes, yeah.
Love it.
I have once or twice fallen over because it's not looking well. There you go. So.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And this partly started with this Jeanette Winterson advice.
Well, yeah, I think I was probably doing it a bit before, but I think it vindicated what I was doing, really.
And you say you try to have poetry in your day every day.
Oh, yes, definitely. Several poets if I can.
And has that been something that's been part of your life for always, or did it come and go? Or
yeah, well, I love poetry in the latter parts of school. And I was taught, I don't know if you remember the case, but I went to school in Bristol, and my English teacher, he was arrested falsely, as it turned out, for murder. Mm. And Christopher Jeffreys, do you remember that case?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He taught me Blake, and he was brilliant. And he I suppose, sowed that then for the rest of my days, really. But I flirted with it from off and on, but in about the last 30 years, I suppose, I've really been reading. And it's the joy is, I suppose, you can get so much from a relatively short read just by, you know, taking in one or two poems.
I know quite a few people who have always got one in the bag, have always got one in the... And they're people whose lives very often don't have much time in them, or who are on the move a lot. And so actually, as you're saying, you know, the poem is a compact way of getting that kind of reflection and thought happening in a short space of time, you know.
I think it's good for the mental health as well, I think. You know, and of course you tend to be attracted to poetry that reflects your own values. But also I used to work with offenders, and when I worked with adult offenders particularly, and when I worked in the prison for a couple of years, they did a lot of poetry writing with them, and that was interesting.
I bet it was.
Yeah, I mean, some of it was pretty gloomy.
Of course.
You know, especially the lifers.
Yeah. But, wow, Charlie, that's amazing. So were you doing that in the prison as part of the prison education?
Well, I was a probation officer in the prison. And so it was, I used to do it sometimes just a one-to-one, you know, so with life as a probation officer inside a prison didn't have a great role, but you get to know them, befriend people. And that was a way of conducting a relationship. You know, so they write a poem, then you write something in response, then they write in response to you, sort of thing. And it really worked with some. And it did bind you together, really, in a situation where obviously most of those folk feel pretty alienated.
So coming back to the Alice Oswald.
Yes, yeah.
What is it that you enjoy about her poetry?
It is because it's nature, and it's a bit gentler than Ted Hughes, and it's a bit like some of Seamus Heaney's poetry, and it has that sort of very physicality about it. As I say about this one, really, I think you can feel like you can touch what she's talking about, Not all her poetry for me is immediately accessible, but it becomes accessible. And I've heard her, I think she just moved to Bristol now, but she used to live in Devon. And I heard her talking about how she'd get up very early in the morning and go out and before her children were awake. And I thought, yeah. So between her personality and her writing, it all sort of comes together for me, really.
Lovely. So it's a kind of... There's a kind of way of being that's inhabited in these poems, isn't there, that feels like that's speaking to your spirit somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I feel like she's got life's priorities right.
I think it's just amazing, this journey in this poem. I just wondered what your feeling is about the kind of the journey of the poem. Because you start out with, it is the story of the falling rain. It's quite... It's quite declared, isn't it?
And yes.
It's not very intimate at the beginning. It's quite kind of big. But then it becomes very personal.
It does. And then it's at the end, the last couplet, you know, which I was saying earlier, which is the story of the falling rain that rises to the light and falls again. So yes, it does. It goes from the sort of macro to the very personal, very very intimate, really. And the bit I also liked was, you know, the water, which is so raw, so earthy strong, and lurks in cast iron tanks and leaks along, drawn under gravity towards my tongue. And I like running, and always very thirsty at the end. And so that's what I had, that image of being the thirst being quenched. But also, as it says, fills the pipework of this song. You know, it's what informs this poem. And it does seem to be the very essence of life, that we all need water, and everything needs water to survive. And this is, you know, it keeps coming back, fortunately. And that idea of it rising to the light, and in the middle of the poem, where you've got that picture with the grass, I mean, with the sunlight going through, which is always, you know, is wonderful. But she's right, you feel like she's right down on the ground. If only I could pass as clear as water through a plume of grass, you know. And so really, really trying to get that very intimate relationship.
It's wonderful, that moment, isn't it? If only I, a passerby, could pass as clear as water through a plume of grass to find the sunlight hidden at the tip, turning to seed, a kind of lifting raindrip.
Yes. I mean, it's that idea of the needs of the grass being met to continue to grow and to develop, and what we all, but also how it says, I might, you know like water, how to balance the weight of hope against the light of patience. So, yeah.
Yeah, what's that? What is that for you, Charlie?
I suppose for me, it's. I mean, the second line of that is where we, you know, where you have real hopes and you want them to be realised, but you realise that you're aware that they may not be delivered very quickly, or there's a lot of graft to be done before they are fulfilled. And of course, water has that balancing quality, doesn't it? Where it's always balanced. Wherever you are, so it's actually, you know, about keeping that balanced mind, and the awareness of hopes are not always immediately fulfilled, if they're fulfilled at all. So we do need to be a bit patient.
Yes, there's that, the patience of the natural cycle. Of not turning immediately into a leaf, but, you know, having to go to fall and go through that whole slow process. And
excellent. Yeah, that's really good.
And I love the idea of the flower that from the ground flows green.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, sort of turning gravity. I tend to think of things flowing down, but it's lovely that it's
sucked up.
It's a cycle of going up and down.
Yeah, it is wonderful, and how everything is incredibly vulnerable, seed head smaller than my thumbnail, but it still can produce this, thanks to water, this beautiful flower. But it, you know, also pointing out that it, you know, flows from the ground, flows green and momentary, you know, so that it's not going to last forever.
I love with her though, I'm noticing so much here is her incredible ability to stretch two very different kind of registers at the same time. So all the way through this, that the balance that you were talking about is there from natural. And then we've got this fantastic, you're right. I love the lurks in cast iron tanks.
Yes.
You know, it's brilliant the way she just sort of introduces that. She doesn't let herself get caught up in any romantic notion of nature. She keeps it real, doesn't she?
Very much so. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of her poetry as well, really.
So aside from the incantation in the woods, is there anybody else that you know, share your love of poetry with at the moment?
Not particularly. I mean, I read out the poems I try and write and things like that. In that sense, it's quite solitary, really.
Alice Oswald's work, and this poem in particular, and the way you've spoken about it, there is an intimacy going on Yeah. And there is a privacy as well in that, in some way, not a closing down to anybody else, but just that,
yes,
that need for a quiet consultative space in some way.
Well, I think things that are precious, and you take a bit of a risk, don't you, when you sort of share them. And if it can be quite disappointing, possibly irrationally disappointing, when someone doesn't see the magic that you see, sort of thing. So,
yeah. How would you describe the friend that this poem is?
I think it's it'd be a reassuring friend, and as I say, you know, its values are right, and it would reassure me that I'm not completely crazy when I'm striding around the woods reading poetry. So I think in that way it's a reassuring and gentle friend, I think.
Alice Oswald, A Short Story of Falling. It is the story of the falling rain, to turn into a leaf and fall again. It is the secret of a summer shower, to steal the light and hide it in a flower. And every flower, a tiny tributary that from the ground flows green and momentary, is one of water's wishes. And this tale hangs in a seed head, smaller than my thumbnail. If only I, a passerby, could pass as clear as water through a plume of grass, to find the sunlight hidden at the tip, turning to seed a kind of lifting raindrip, then I might know, like water, how to balance the weight of hope against the light of patience. Water, which is so raw, so earthy strong, and lurks in cast iron tanks, and leaks along, drawn under gravity, towards my tongue, to cool and fill the pipework of this song, which is the story of the falling rain that rises to the light and falls again.
That was Al with the gift reading at the end there. Our thanks, of course, to Charlie for allowing us to share that conversation with you, and to Alice Oswald and to Penguin for giving us permission to use the poem. Fee, I think you're a big fan of Alice Oswald, aren't you?
I am a big fan of Alice Oswald.
It's the first Alice Oswald that we've had, isn't it?
I think it is. And it was great that it was that poem. It's from the collection Falling Awake, which I've got to say, it's definitely one of my all-time favourite collections. And I think it starts from the title, and you go in.
I was just going to say, what a fantastic title.
It's just brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm really loath to sort of start wittering on about what it is for me, or why, or how, and because the poems are so delicate and so strong, and so they work in such subtle but powerful ways. They're wonderful poems, absolutely wonderful, and lovely, wonderful that we should have a story from someone who, well, we've had many conversations where people are compelled to action by a poem. But this is really in a way where somebody is kind of embodying the mode of being of the poet themselves. They've sort of inherited her kind of world of being and landscape, and they're out there in the world sort of inhabiting that way of looking and that way of being. And that's wonderful to think about how a poet can inspire us like that.
Well, Fee, you were talking about walking and listening at the beginning of the episode, and it is one of my favourite bits that Charlie says, where he talks about walking in the forest and speaking these poems out loud, and he even says loudly. You know, he's not just doing it under his breath. He's kind of, you know, and there's a real kind of physicality to that that you know, and allows you to get a hold of the muscularity of the words and of the language. And I think he's absolutely right. It really, you kind of have to do that with poems. You know, you very kindly, last time I saw you, gave me a collection of Dylan Thomas poems, and it has to be read out loud, doesn't it? You know, something else happens. It becomes, it reveals itself, I think, for me when it's read out loud. So maybe that's going to be my little lockdown thing, is that I'll take some exercise and go for walks with some Dylan Thomas and loudly read them out loud.
I think that's wonderful. I'm so pleased to know that. And that's all was so beautifully expressed, Michael. Thank you. It was lovely. I remember also, I think it was Tom who brought us the Lake Isle of Innisfree. That's a long while ago now, but I think he talked about going out to the park with a volume of Yeats. And I'm not sure that he was doing it loudly. I think he was maybe, well, I don't know. Maybe he was loudly, but yes, I think that's it. Take it out, utter it. And what a, no better time than now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Fee, anything else we need to talk about? You are going to be leading some workshops.
Yes, yes. Got a couple of workshops coming up and I've just done one as well. And there's so much in what we discover with the poems through talking to people about poems as friends and the work that we're doing together as a team and with our kind of wider community of writers and readers. You know, the project involves lots of things. The poems themselves, the reading aloud, the listening, the conversation, and how these elements kind of combine. They have lots to offer different groups of people who might be meeting and interested to be with poetry. So that's, we've been doing some workshops for writers around that, around the listening and the conversation of the poem, and also a group of people working with writing for well-being. Obviously a really busy and vital field of practice at the moment, and that's been a wonderful invitation to have. And also Sally, who works with us, has been leading some fantastic work with students, university students, working with poetry through the idea of poems as friend and through the idea of conversation and encounter with the page. So
it's been really powerful, that, I think, hasn't it? She's done some amazing work there. So yeah, hopefully we'll get some opportunities to do more of that. I think that's about all we've got time for this month, Fee. We'll be back with you next month with more Poems as Friends. Until then, thank you for listening.